Welcome. This is Dr. Z here with the Natural Nursing Dr. Z show, and I hope we have our guests lined up. But take time to introduce myself. I'm Dr. Z. I'm one of the founding fathers of the University of Bridgeport College of Naturopathic Medicine, where I teach lots of courses in history of medicine and rheumatology and herbal medicine. And I have a private practice here in Connecticut. And I've been working with the natural nurse for many years to discuss health, wellness, and issues in alternative medicine today. And we are excited to have our guest. We're trying to get the guest on there. So we might have to go to another program, or we could do something if we can get her. But anyway, so I'll talk a little bit about some of the interesting things going on in the natural alternatives calendar. We're planning our amazing trip to Jamaica in February into March, where we do eco tours for cures, where we travel to the Jamaican rainforest and learn about herbs and holistic life as lived by the Rastafarian and Maroon people. And so this is a good opportunity to do some traveling and also to learn about herbal medicine from a deep, deep perspective. This is what we call ethnobotany, where ethnobotany is the study of how traditional people use plants in their daily lives. And with no drugstores around the place where we go in Jamaica, far away from the tourist traps on the North Coast, people still rely on herbal medicine as their primary source of care, and on their local herbalists, their bush doctors, as they're called. And so we're really excited to take people to Jamaica on our ethnobotany sojourns called Eco Tours for Cures. And I'll be one of the instructors there. I'm not sure if the natural nurse will make it this time, but I'll be one of the instructors there. And usually have Dr. Lindsay Chmielewski also participating. And we bring down photographers and people interested in hiking and nature cure lovers and herbalists and naturopathic students and people that just are interested in reggae culture and Rasta culture. So we're really excited to do that. And so you can get more information about that on the website ecotoursforcures.com or our Facebook, which is Facebook.com/ Eco Tours for Cures Jamaica, or on the website www.naturalnurse.com. So that's one of our big trips that we're planning on. And I think with COVID, you have to just be sure that you're COVID negative I think 72 to 48 hours before you actually board the plane. And they're pretty good at the hotels now, when we travel, to have available. So it looks like we're having trouble getting the guest on. So I could start launching into some interesting history of medicine show that I wanted to do. So I'll start talking about that, I guess, and maybe we'll get the guest on and we'll talk a little bit about her book. And if we can't get her on, oh, she's on. Great. Okay. Let me introduce Kat Mayer and her book there. Her book is Energetic Herbalism, A Guide to Sacred Plant Traditions, Integrating Elements of Vitalism, Ayurveda, and Chinese Medicine. And I never had the opportunity to meet Kat, even though I'm also a member of the American Herbalist Guild as a registered herbalist. And of course, I'm also a licensed naturopathic physician. But we have, one degree of separation amongst a lot of our friends and colleagues, so I consider her a friend here. And, you know, between, you know, her probably knowing Dr. Kamai and, of course, David Winston and all these people that I have rubbed elbows with all the time. So I'm so excited to have on Kat Mayer. Kat, are you there?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
I hear you great.
Okay, great. Yeah, I think the wrong Zoom was sent. So
yeah.
Here we are, making it through. And thank you so much.
Yes, it's great to have you on here. So we have some interesting things in common, not only as registered herbalists and, like I said, you know, kind of friends in common, but also my wife's family, her whole family on both sides are from County Clare.
Oh my goodness.
Ennis, Doolin, Ennis-Dyman, that whole area, Liston-Varna. So they all own property there and live there. It's amazing. So, and I know a lot of your herbal sojourns, or your kind of discovering this, your roots of energetic herbalism started there in Ireland. Tell us a little bit about your, before we get into your book, because I have some great questions to ask you. You know, as a professor of history, of medical history at the school I started, the University of Bridgeport Naturopathic College, I actually teach about eclecticism and physiomedicalists. And at the, you know, a while back, there were five types of medical doctors: the eclectics, the physiomedicalists, the allopathic doctors or the regulars, the homeopaths, and the nature cure hydropaths run by Russell Trowell.
Right.
And then slowly but surely, they all, with the formation of the ANA, of the AMA, and in opposition of the American Homeopathic Association and the ethics thing that was formed in 1847, where it was, you could not consult with medical irregulars, even though the irregulars were more successful, and the rise of the four-year Germanic medicine germ theory schools versus vitalism, you saw the by 1900, a lot of those irregulars had died out. And then you had guys like Worcester Beach trying to reform medicine and form the eclectics, and the physiomedicalists came after with Curtis. But this is all part of study at my naturopathic college. I can't vouch for the other colleges, but we talk all about that. But before we get into that, let's talk about yourself. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Oh, well, thank you. That's quite a question. So I think I'll go back to your original question and just talk about my when I lived in Doolin. And, you know, it really is today when we're looking at the need to really look at colonialism and who are we and how are we practicing and, you know, what are the traditions we're using. One of the reasons I wanted to talk about my personal journey was to really talk about my indigeneity and where do I come from and what are my roots. And so part of my journey in my early 20s over to the amazing West Cole, that it's a medical school, but instead of drugs.
Like lost Cat for some reason.
Pardon me?
Yeah, Cal, we're losing you. So can you repeat those last couple of, about last minute?
Sure. I'm not certain. Okay, so is that better?
Yeah, we can hear you now.
Okay, great. I'm not certain where I dropped off, but just, you know, really looking at, you know.
Well, I know you were trying to go to medical school in England at a good phytotherapy school, but you stopped off in Ireland and just fell in love with the Emerald Island, and particularly that area of the West Coast near the Burren, and the you felt great spirit there.
So, you know, it was just how I write about the golden thread in the book, and how, you know, that golden thread is, you know, what we feel, it's kind of our heart's desire, you could call it karma, but just really following that and coming to the West Coast. And a lot of times you don't really know that you're in it. You're wondering, well, why am I here? And why am I so deeply, deeply enchanted? And, you know, but just really trusting. And so that was the word on the west coast of Ireland, and the Burren. And the Burren is a lunar landscape topography. And what's so incredibly rare about it is there's Andalusian, Arctic, Alpine wildflowers. So the flora and the botany there is just exquisite. So, you know, really kind of ambling around, doing hikes. I had to make money to pay for my canceled plane ticket. So I would lead botany tours, just getting a book. And so, you know, a lot of times it isn't until you come home and you digest and you reflect and you realize, you know, that really was an ancestor's journey. You know, that's really, you know, part of that. So, you know, most of the herbs that we use in our practice today are European. You know, St. John's wort, dandelion, plantain, motherwort, all of the materia medica, basically, that we're using are European. And so what's the relationship there and what's the history? And, you know, you talk about, you know, the great history. I'm so, so pleased. And, of course, you have to teach the history, but that's so, so really important to really understand the herbal journey. And, you know, we're facing so many of the same issues, and yet we have an incredible amount of freedom that, you know, the practitioners really didn't have after, as you say, the Flexner Report in 1914, which was the beginning of the AMA and closed down the other schools. But, you know, really looking at, you know, we have our native plants here, which many are endangered. But the weedy ones, there are European allies there. So it was just really looking at the plants there, beginning to learn the plants, and then really understanding, how do we work with these clinically?
Right. The one thing that's great about your book, and I like it, is, of course, the title, Energetic Herbalism. So that could be taken on at many levels. It could be looking at the energetic of the herb, and of course, the energetic of the patient or their malady or imbalance. And it kind of rings true, the old aphorism, it's more important to treat the patient who has the disease than the disease the patient has. And I know you have training in conventional medicine, and then, you know, you have to incorporate this different way of looking at patients in energetic herbalism, or vitalism, as we say, vitalism versus mechanism. Can you go through that a little bit like you did in your book? It's fascinating for the listeners to understand that.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Yeah, so you're exactly right. You know, the energetic lens does apply to the plant, the presenting constitution, and then the deeper constitution of the individual. And why I bring in traditional Chinese medicine is, you know, not at all, you know, I do want to say I talk about some huge broad swaths, 5,000 years of traditions and systems. And, you know, the intention of the book is, you know, to really, it's almost like homeopathic doses of Ayurveda and Chinese medicine. But my intention is to really distill the common thread of that all of these traditions, even vitalism, we're talking about the elements. And so fire is fire wherever you are in the world, and water and earth. And these are the characteristics that play out in a plant as well as in our health. So if we look at ephedra or Mormon tea, it's an antihistamine and it's drying. Well, it too is dry and it grows in the desert. And so the whole idea of the alchemy of the plant taking on the landscape, you know, nettles is water loving. It grows by streams and loves to be in wet and damp soil. And it's kidney medicine, and it's working with our own internal ocean. So, you know, what I say is, you know, we look at the energetic of the plant. Is it hot, cold, damp, dry? And then what's the presenting? You know, is it a headache? Is it, you know, a red hot infection? You know, you want to treat that. I mean, in some ways, everybody says don't treat the symptoms, but we kind of do. Like in acute medicine, you do want to treat that presenting system. And then ideally, what we want to be working on is, well, what's my constitution and who am I? And so in Western herbalism, in Greek language, it's sanguine, choleric, you know, those constitutions. But for me, the constitutions of Ayurveda or the Indian and East Indian elements really, really rang true to me, and they make so much sense. It's very intuitive. So you're also helping an individual to say, well, who am I? Am I mostly fire? Am I mostly air? You know, kapha constitution is mostly earth and water. And a lot of times they kind of get the bum rap as being large and lazy or not moving. And when you understand that they're mostly earth and water, they're incredibly solid. They're incredibly grounded. And so what's called the dosha, D-O-S-H-A, is also the constitution in Ayurveda medicine. And doshas are faults as well as, you know, they're kind of the imbalances. And that's a little tricky for people to get. But so if I look at, you know, for me, I'm pitta. I'm mostly fire. So, you know, I'm very active, I love teaching, I love being out there, and yet I'm quick to anger, I'm quick for jealousy. So my gifts are my challenges. And so if we know our constitution, if we know the elements that we're mostly made of, then we can choose lifestyle, we can choose food. You know, I'm a Yankee, I'm a Northerner, and here I am in Charlottesville, and I just wilt in the summers. Like, I run hot anyway, and so the heat, you know, but this is where the plants kind of sent me on my mission into the Appalachian Mountains. So I really have to have lots of what's called refrigerant herbs, lots of cucumber, lots of hibiscus. I really have to be mindful. So for me, energetic herbalism, you're exactly right. It is the plant and the person. And to begin to have this lens of not, oh, here's, you know, digestive herbs for inflammation. And you see 20 of them. And it's like, well, my gosh, how do I pick them? So you pick them by looking at the person and the constitution and, you know, really kind of deeply knowing the plants, so you don't need a huge apothecary where you can really do a lot with a few plants.
Right. So that's one of the most challenging things for my, you know, the neophyte students that I'm training at the, you know, University of Bridgeport Naturopathic College, not only in naturopathic thinking, but also in herbology and sometimes they come in with it. They come back with a, at least a well thought out treatment plan. But then I said, well, did you actually look at the patient? What's their constitution? And they look at me like, oh yeah, I forgot. I said, go back and do it. And the plan changes more times than none, Kat.
Right. Well, that's why it's great that you're training them, because from the ground up, you know, you have a different, I keep saying lens, but you have a different relationship. And, you know, and that's sort of the first thing. Well, what is the constitution? Oh, okay. Well, what are you presenting with? And that's what I really kind of dug about the book is so much revealed itself in the writing of it. You know, and it's like you think you know where you're going on your journey, and if you're not relaxed and open to other things, you kind of miss the gems. But you know, in Ayurvedic medicine, you have Prakruti, which is a constitution you're born with, and then they have Vikruti, and that's that current condition. And so we have tissue states. And so what I really love is training herbalists to use the same language as their clients. So yeah. Tissue states is vitalism. It's part of the physiomedical tradition that you were referring to, and it's based in Greek medicine. And so, you know, you can say to a client, oh, your spleen chi is deficient or your vata is out of bounds. But when you use Western language, like, well, this is kind of stagnant, or this looks a little hot. This has too much heat there, and let's cool that down. The tissue states, which I go into in great detail, because there's, other than Matthew Wood, there really isn't anything out there written on tissue states, and going deep, doing a deep dive and looking at the clinical applications of, again, that's hot, cold, damp, dry, and tense and relaxed. And you think it's simple, but, you know, as you know, you can see somebody and they have all six tissue states. But it's just such a great way to begin to formulate and understand that, you know, inflammation is heat. And look at how many inflammatory diseases we have. And heat is treated by cooling herbs, which are the proanthocyanidins, the antioxidants. You know, oxidation is heat and stress. So that's why we need the berries and the cooling herbs. And you know, it's super cool when it really makes sense energetically.
Yes. And then, you know, the physiomedicalists, they were kind of an interesting group. They were kind of a branch of the eclectics that didn't want to use more toxic herbs, whereas the eclectics, you know, they felt that we could use the really powerful toxic herbs. I always admire when I studied Dr. Terschke. He was a naturopath out in Oregon that developed Terschke's formula, which had four of the most powerful toxic herbs you can imagine. Bryonia, Phytolacca, Gelsemium, and Aconite was his formula. But understanding the dose is very important. Wow. It's like the old saying, there's no such thing as a poison. It's just the dose that makes it poisonous or not. So the eclectics used those types of things. They were like the MDs at the turn of the century that brought echinacea and golden seal into vogue, because people think that these are kind of new things, but, you know, history or herstory repeats itself. You know, so the physiomedicalists came up with this. They wanted to use, you know, less toxic herbs, as I recall, and Alba Curtis wrote one of the Materia Medicas, and I forget the name of the other gentleman who was the other MD that wrote the other book on physiomedicalists that I have. But and then they talked about those tissue states. So you have constriction is one of them that I know is a big one for patients. They come in and, you know, when I work on them doing body work or manipulation, they're tight. They're always, I adjust them. And then if I don't understand their constitution, they're back the next week or 2 weeks with the same affliction. It's like, you know, wow, the muscles just have this deep holographic memory because I haven't really dealt with the constriction and they haven't dealt with it. So then we sit down and have a long conversation about constriction. So what are some herbs in your book that you talk about for helping people that are constricted, tight, tight mind and body? That's what I tell patients. Yeah. Not only the body is tight.
And so funny you say that, because I, you know, David Hoffman says, when in doubt, give them nettles. And so I agree wholeheartedly with him. And then, unless they're super cold, because nettles is cold. And I always say, when in doubt, give them nervines or bitters, because bitters in Europe and so many cultures, that's just part of their diet, you know. Morning, noon, and night when they eat, they would take bitters. And the bitter herbs are generally the relaxing herbs. So as far as tension or constriction, I guess one of my favorites is motherwort. I think the world of motherwort, Leonaris cardiaca, which means lion-hearted. And so it is a bitter. It is a vasodilator. It's a relaxant. It's incredibly wonderful for women with cycle issues, with tension, anxiety, for hot flashes. It's great for men, relaxing, releasing cardiovascular tension. It's headaches, you know, liver heat, liver constriction, that kind of Yosemite Sam, that, you know, the heat rising, the anxiety. I love motherwort, and it's a bitter. And it's a mint, so it grows very easily. It's very easy to grow. In fact, be careful. It may take over. But you use the above ground part, and you don't need much at all. It's not a toxic botanical, but you don't need much because it's that powerful. And the one thing with motherwort, the eclectics did say, is you always want to wean off it if you've been on it for a while, because the body... Wow. does get used to that relaxation. So there's motherwort's one. Another favorite that's in the book is agrimony, Agrimonia jubitoria. It's a great relaxant. It's fabulous as part of a formula for passing kidney stones. It has a specificity for the ureters. And so I'll use other herbs along with it, but agrimony, it's agrimonia, and it was a Bach flower remedy. And what Bach described it is for that person who has sort of a smiling countenance, but is tortured behind it. And so that's what the Bach flower remedy is, and that's how we use it. It's also one of the main three ingredients. We use agrimony, meadow sweet, and chamomile, if people aren't allergic to chamomile, as a hands-down amazing formula for IBS, because there's that alternating constriction, relaxation, but it's very astringing, and oftentimes there's tension. The nervous system is related with IBS or colitis or some of those presentations.
I would always say I get aggravated I can never remember the name agrimony when I was doing my herb walks at the school at Medicinal Herb Garden. I'm the steward of the garden, and I came up with a mnemonic aggravated that I couldn't remember the name, but it's kind of fascinating that that's what it's good for. That's great information, Kat.
Yeah, and you know, the doctrine of signatures, I'm certain you're aware of it, and, you know, Paracelsus, early alchemist, there was a whole centuries where practitioners would look at the color or the shape of the plant and find that as an indicator to what body part, and essentially it was more than the physical, it was an archetype, and so today we call that spirit medicine. But that's the doctrine. It's the whole energetic of it. And agrimony has this yellow flower, and that's for liver. You know, liver. Yellow oftentimes in nature indicates liver remedies. And again, you can't go out and, as I'm sure your listeners know, you really need to correctly identify and really know what you're ingesting. I mean, it's never this blanket statement, but it's absolutely mind-blowing how nature has this whole language herself that transcends the chemical constituents, and it's patterns. And this is what energetic herbalism is. It's treating patterns and our inner terrain. And I know the inner terrain got a bum rap during COVID. I don't know why. I kind of stopped following certain theories in the whole COVID thing, But it's what it's all about. It's, you know, look at the, you know, what sets people more vulnerable are the inflammatory, the diabetes, the hypertension. That's terrain. And so, you know, I've been massively focusing on my terrain during COVID because, you know, it's important. It's like this wake up. It's get your immune system moving. Let's get mobilized. You kind of get lazy. And it's just been incredibly revealing to me how to bring these herbs and foods into our daily life because, you know, when you have 100 bottles of supplements, it's not good. Supplements take a lot of energy to digest. So how are we going to bring in the foods that really nourish?
Right. Well, we'll take a quick break and play our Natural Medicine Chest, which is our little mini modular program on nutrition and herbs that myself and the natural nurse, Ellen Kamai, developed. And when we return, we're going to talk more about this wonderful user-friendly resource for the home apothecary and practitioners and folks that are interested in herbal medicine with Kat right here. Stay with us.
On this edition of the Natural Medicine Chest, we'll take a look at the soybean, its phytochemistry, and its role as a food and medicine.
It is exciting to see a resurgence in research by universities and food scientists on the role that foods play in disease prevention. Many of these institutions, such as the United Soybean Board, the American Soybean Farmers Association, and the National Cancer Institute, are busy developing designer foods, or superfoods, concentrating the essential nutrients and phytochemicals in soybeans and other foods that have potent medicinal effects. Commonly known foods which have soy in them include soy milk, a cheese-like substance called tofu, tempeh, a fermented soy protein, and tamari, a fermented soy sauce. The soybean is a rich source of many nutrients, including selenium, zinc, beta-carotene, vitamins A, C, and E, and 20 of the 22 amino acids. Soy also contains essential fatty acids.
Research on soy foods is vast and well known to health enthusiasts, although the general public and physicians in the United States may not be aware of this plethora of research. In Japan and China, however, this is not the case, as a voluminous number of scientific studies have been carried out in animals and humans. Chinese studies reveal that soy products can increase the ability, rate of activity, and number of white blood cells. Patients receiving chemotherapy and radiation can benefit from drinking soy milk, which in several studies demonstrated a protective effect on the liver and gastrointestinal system.
It is interesting to note that the British journal Lancet revealed that vegetarians and Asians who ingest high amounts of soy have the lowest rates of cancer. This is due to one of soy's constituents called genistein. This chemical is a phytoestrogen or plant estrogen, which can decrease and block the uptake of human estrogen and testosterone, as well as enhance its excretion. Like the drug tamoxifen, it competes with estrogen for uptake in the reproductive tissues. By doing so, hormone-dependent cancers like ovarian, breast, and prostate cancers may be prevented.
In conditions where there is a deficiency of hormones, such as osteoporosis and menopause, soy isoflavones, such as genistein, can weakly mimic estrogen and reduce the severity of these problems.
So, listeners, don't count out the versatile soybean. Make it a delicious and nutritious part of your natural medicine chest.
And we're back with more of the program. Thanks for staying with us. And we're talking with Kat Mayer, who is author of Energetic Herbalism, A Guide to Sacred Plant Traditions, Integrating Elements of Vitalism, Ayurveda, and Chinese Medicine, with a foreword by Rosemary Gladstar. So we're really excited to have you back, Kat. And you know what's interesting? I was just making hawthorn solid extract.
That's so awesome.
Yeah, thank you. As a project for school, teaching the students. And And I just opened up randomly to your book, Talk About Serendipity. And you have a fabulous materia medica, which is, I guess, defined as, you know, the detailed information about the plants and their indications and their history, et cetera, about hawthorn berry. And why don't you talk about that one? Because there's some interesting stuff here that folks wouldn't really know, like the use of hawthorn in Chinese medicine for bloating and stagnation. You know, we're upon the holidays, people tend to eat quite a bit, and hawthorn can act kind of to help people with that condition. So take us away.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, Crataegus. The Chinese is so interesting in their five elements with bitter flavor. They don't have the bitter flavor stimulating the liver. They have it nourishing the heart, and it's cooling. And when you kind of think it through, it's very cooling and nourishing. And the hawthorn being in the rose family, lots of the rose family plants, like our friend agrimony, that's in the rose family. Agrimony's cooling. And so that's why, you know, a lot of times they have it good for the heart. And the Chinese hawthorn, it's a different species, but that is just mind-blowing for what's called postprandial indigestion. It's that I can't believe I ate the whole thing feeling, which we might be having coming up into the holidays. But it's just really fabulous for moving stagnant digestion. And we can use this, our own hawthorn, you know, doing the same thing. It's not as potent as the Chinese species, and you can get that organically. But hawthorn berry and flower has been used, you know, for millennia. There are so many amazing myths. And, you know, what's interesting is in my research in the book, I think it was in the Eclectic that said this, where the hawthorn berry really came from is there was an Irish physician over 100 years ago, and he just had this, you know, amazing reputation working with heart patients, and he kind of had this secret remedy. And then after his death, the story goes, and nurse revealed that it was hawthorn berry extract. And so, you know, the berries are amazing. But what I've really come to love is the leaf and flower. They are shown to have more antioxidants, really. The berry is a fabulous syrup. I love it as a tincture. I try to have my clients make their own medicine. And, you know, I would love your concentrate recipe because I've tried to make the conserve, but, oh, my God, the seeds. How do you strain the seeds out?
I grind all the seeds down with a, you know, real powerful grinder. And because the seeds, they do create a very powerful astringency because of the condensed tannins in there, which are the OPCs. But, you know, you just have to tell patients when you make it like that, they can't take the hawthorn directly, you know, scoop out the thing and put it in their mouth because it's too astringent. But when you put in a tea, it's lovely, Kat, when you do it.
Oh, cool. Nice. Yeah.
And I'll use the flowers, the leaves, and the fruit, whole fruit with the stone, you know, the pit or the seed in there, grind it all up and then tincture it and then drive off all the alcohol. And then I use some glycerin to just kind of, you know, once it's the consistency of like fruit leather, I'll just reconstitute it with a little bit of... The reason why is because, you know, we used to use great companies that went out of business. Ed Madison was a naturopath and herbalist that used to run his company. I forget the name of it, actually, but Scientific Botanicals. And they made the best solid extracts There are some other companies and herbalists that make solid extracts, but sometimes they put honey in it. And a lot of my, and I'm, so I'm making this for a patient who's diabetic, can't have the honey, needs the hawthorn, and wants something without honey. So a word to you herbalists out there that are making these products, let's make some diabetic friendly solid extracts out there without honey.
Absolutely. I totally agree. And, and you know, oftentimes there is the inflammation and the excess. And so those tannins and clearing and, you know, they're also antimicrobial, you know, tannins. And I know you know this, but tannins, every single plant has tannins because that's what the plant mobilizes in the presence of infection. And so, you know, white oak has like 90, white oak galls have like 90% tannins, and they're super, super tannic. And look, those leaves are the last to fall. You know, they're leathery and they're really strong. So, you know, tannins, you know, have their own medicine there. But yeah, I totally agree. We try to make everything so sweet and, you know, even honey in traditional medicine in Ayurveda, you know, it's just excessive use of it. And then what are the other flavors? You know, what's that tart of hawthorn? And, you know, to really explore and really look at that, and all the young children drinking juice, even though it might be quote unquote natural juice. You know, the sugar destroys the papillae on the tongue. And so no wonder children kind of have a small range of foods they desire. And you start them out on mint teas, or you start them out on flavor. You know, I'm not that hardcore, but yeah, that's so great. So yeah, I'm a huge fan of hawthorn leaf and flower, and then the berry and berry syrup. We make a lot of syrups, and I'm not certain what your recipes are, with molasses, because we see so much deficiency. We see a lot of, you know, fatigue, deficiency, and working with good molasses sometimes can help that. Lots of B vitamins, of course, supporting the blood, the iron.
Yeah, your book teaches the reader how to actually do kitchen apothecaryism, kitchen work. A lot of these remedies can be made in the kitchen. And that's, I love that, because talk about energy, the energy of you working with the herbs, preparing it from start to finish. Talk about, you know, we know that water and essences are captured holographically in things. You know, the homeopaths have proved that. Dr. Emoto has proven that in his work. Think about the power of work, making your own medicine and shaking it and thinking about it. And so it's the power of the herb plus the power of your intentions. Talk about that, because that's part of energy and herbalism as well.
Yeah, without a doubt. You know, there's so many beautiful coffee table herbal books now on apothecary and beautiful pictures. And when I say coffee table, I'm not putting them down. They're incredibly valuable. And, you know, part of me was like, golly, there's so much of this information out there. But, you know, one of my intentions for the book was to make a manual, to make, okay, here's a book. Essentially, it's my three-year curriculum. And it, you know, after we got into the project, it was a lot more academic and clinical. And then I realized, wow, you know, I want every family. I want individuals, you know, treating your family. Let's really learn the lens of energetic, because in between the spaces is all about kind of, you know, I don't think there should be any other conversation. Did I lose you?
No, I'm here. We're good.
Okay, good. because your assistant called on my office phone, and it's kind of new, and I'm just want to make sure that I don't lose you.
You're loud and clear.
Okay. So the conversation today is about climate change, right? And so when we make our own medicines, you know, Suavo Brooks said it's so, a true herbalist knows 40 uses of one herb as versus 40 herbs and one use.
And oh, it's really, wow.
Yeah, right? And he said that 30 years ago. And it's true. If you look at Rosita Arvigo and travel to Central America, you know, these healers have 5 herbs in their apothecary, and they traverse the universe with them. So part of the message is also, how do we deeply, directly engage in what's happening with the climate? What can we do? And that's what people earnestly want to know. So when we make our own medicines, we have our own jars, we're saving bottles, we're gathering our own plants. And, you know, I really challenge herbalists, myself included. It's like, where's that rhodiola coming from? Is it coming from Russia? Is it coming from, you know, the Caucasus Mountains? Like, can we afford now to be shipping in these exotic plants? You know, so why don't we get used to really understanding what do we have right here? And obviously, as clinicians, there might be certain herbs that you just can't go without. But for the homestead, for the home apothecary, how do we make it simple? And so Susan Weed was my very first herbal teacher, and I'm talking 30 years ago. And why she was perfect was I came out of med school and I had all these rules and limitations. And of course, Susan, you know, is great for kind of breaking down boundaries, but she also makes simples. Like, she makes herbs, she gives you formulas where you don't have to read, you don't have to have a fancy scale. And I work with a lot of unhoused people. We're out, we've got clinics, we're teaching people how to make their own medicine, and they don't have, you know, Nutribullets, and, you know, they don't have a lot of equipment. So a lot of my home apothecary, they're not fancy, you know, they're pretty basic formulas, and we've been making medicine like this for 30 years, and I'm going to get that concentrate formula from you.
When Ellen and I take people on our trip to Jamaica, before you came on, I was talking about our next trip. We've been taking
I heard people. That. Yeah, I was on. Yeah, that's cool.
We do Eco Tours for Cures to Jamaica. And I've been studying with, my introduction was, of course, studying with a Jamaican bush doctor who passed. And he was honored in Herbalgram when he passed as a power. I mean, he trained, you know, Rick Scalzo came on our trip and studied with him, and so many luminaries of herbalism came and studied.
Oh,
with
nice.
But yeah, talk about being in the bush. Here we are in the middle of nowhere in Jamaica, not no magic bullets and things like that. And we're out there chopping herbs and making salves, and we make an amazing pain salve with the Jamaican dogwood and the Guinea hen weed and fresh,
wow,
fresh
very
allspice.
Cool. Nice.
Oh my God, it's wonderful. Fresh allspice and cayenne, bird pepper. Just, it's a really amazing, talk about a warming plant, that's for sure. But yeah, it's great to learn about this. And I think we have to be more self-sufficient. I mean, a lot of the world lives, they don't have CVSs and other things to run to every time they get sick. And this is my, you know, my father was Italian and told me stories of growing up on the farm and my grandparents making everything from scratch, and then my Irish roots too. And then, of course, my second family roots in Jamaica, being an honorary Jamaican citizen, kind of.
Oh, so, lucky you. I wonder how you get to be an honorary Jamaican.
Probably from going down there so many times and maybe having some, who knows, past lives as a Jamaican person or something like that. I don't know. But anyway, it's kind
of course.
You know, we're all called to different paths. And that was my training. So every time I got a chance, I would travel down. You know, I did the naturopathic program at Bastyr and graduated in 1990. And then every chance I get, I could go down to Jamaica and worked with Jamba and learned about Caribbean ethnobotany. So, you know, you have different callings. I love the fact that you could, everywhere you go in the world, you can look up an herbalist and study with them.
Right. Yeah, that's a great point, Eugene. And, you know, it's interesting because I've traveled in Central America and South America a lot. And, you know, one of the first things I do is I go to the market and I find out what are the local bitters. Wow. Because bitters are also low-grade antimicrobials. And it was easy when I was in Belize with Rosita because she made up her jackass bitters. But, you know, it's a beautiful way for people in a temperate climate going down to tropical. It's wet. It's, you know, it just promotes growth. So that's why, you know, a lot of people get the traveling illness. But the bitters and the local bitters are kind of drying. They're drying. They're antimicrobial. And then it's just a beautiful way to begin kind of taking in the local land and the environment, and you know, you get to go to the market, and you know, they have so many of the plants there. So that's beautiful. So that's the apothecary chapter, the whole reason of, you know, one thing I saw work amazingly well with COVID is the onion poultice. And everybody can get onions, and it's incredibly effective. And it went in for that deep, deep, tight constriction. So we have the garlic, and I was just down at the Outer Banks, kind of at the end of the writing the book, because that's where I started writing it. And, you know, my girlfriend, who's an herbalist, she had the garlic honey. She had the garlic all around, just, you know, cooking with it and making salad dressings with the herbal vinegars. Like, really, these aren't just nice things or hip things, but, you know, this is the delivery of our medicine. So that's why I just really wanted good, affordable medicines.
Yeah, like your, I love your, you know, fire cider, or your, you know, kind of take on the fire. Everyone has a little bit different remedies, or the four thieves vinegar. I always tell the students that story when I'm teaching them about that. And, you know, there's so many variations, but, you know, Dr. Diadamo did some interesting work with COVID, looking at the different lectins that can in the food, which can inhibit the binding of the virus, and found that like horseradish was big, and leeks, and a lot of these things that you find in a good fire cider. So I put leeks in my horseradish in there, and thyme. I always remember, what did the doctors in the plague put in their beaks when they wore those interesting masks? They put thyme in there.
right. You know? Yeah.
So I walk around, around with oil of thyme and eucalyptus. I put it in a hanky, one drop, and I put it in my mask. I got no worries. So this is the whole, consciousness of vitalism versus mechanism. Oh, we got to get a vaccine. This is the only way. It's the only way to stop the pandemic. Instead of looking at, like you said, your inner terrain in the book, building up your, looking at your own individualized medicine. You know, what's your blood sugar like? What's your pressure like? How are you when with your mind and body? What tissue state you in, and how can you improve your health? Because that's going to build up your resistance. And when did the body forget how to fight viruses? It never did.
Right.
COVID's a little different, you know?
Right. Yeah, you know, the fire cider, it's so interesting. Eugene, I just wanted to share where I really, really got on my knees with Firesider was when I was serving in Standing Rock, and it was we were evacuating the camp because the storm was moving in, and we all moved into the casino. And I'm telling you, there were elders. There were elders who were there for months and months and months. And, you know, so many of the natives are diabetic, so that sets up a boggy and damp terrain. And so we were triaging with the allopaths and the antibiotics, and they ran out of antibiotics, and they would just start referring. And I'm telling you, Gene, I don't have stock in the company. I saw Firesider move through some frightening lung conditions. And I mean, these elders would come back with big smiles on their face, and they'd come back for another shot, and they wanted more. And then, you know, there were so many donations made. So we had this whole Firesider bar from, like, jalapeno hot down to pomegranate mild. And it was amazing. It was just amazing. So you've got that horseradish and the garlic and the ginger and hawthorn berry. I did a whole batch with hawthorn berry. So, that's great.
Well, thanks for your book, Kat. We're running out of time. We only have about 2 minutes left in the program. Wow, time went by so fast. We could spend so much more time talking about your great book, Energetic Herbalism. Folks can get it anywhere where you can get good quality books, I gather?
Yep. We're sending folks to independent bookstores. Okay. But Amazon's got it. I do have to brag a little bit. It's been out 3 weeks, and they just ran a second printing, which is pretty amazing. So I'm so grateful for that. And then you can get a signed copy from me at KatMeyerHerbalism.com. But we're not interested in selling lots of books, but people do ask for that. But yeah, independent booksellers, Amazon, Chelsea Green is the publisher. Chelsea Green has been an amazing group to work with. So yeah, thank you. This time did fly.
And your last name is M-A-I-E-R, not...
Correct, and it's Meyer.
Yeah, Kat Meyer. So, hey, that is... What a great show. Just keep rocking with the herbalism, and maybe one day we'll see each other at a conference or something like that. And if not...
Well, that'll be dreamy. That'll be dreamy. I know Medicines of the Earth is coming to Black Mountain, and there's a lot of naturopaths there.
Yeah, it's great. I look forward to maybe... seeing you one day.
Yeah, well, thank you so much. What a fun conversation.
Wonderful. And that does it for another edition of The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. We want to wish you the best for the holiday season coming up. And remember, always stay healthy and stay vital. Bye, folks.